This morning we have Craig Bledsoe as our speaker. Craig is one of our elders. He's a longtime member of Otter Creek. He's the retired provost of Lipscomb University. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
I'm no longer provost, that's correct.
And so I am. So I've now told you what I know about Craig, and he's going to tell us the rest of the story.
And I'm thankful to no longer be the provost at Lipscomb University. Well, wow, this is an interesting experience for me, quite honestly. Just the whole thought of talking about myself is hard. And then when you sit back and you think about, oh, okay, so what do I tell these people? You know, what do they really want to hear? And what's really interesting that they would want to hear? You know, and that's always kind of an interesting thing. So there's a lot of self-reflection that kind of went through this for me, and a lot of ahas kind of thing. Even this morning, I'm having some ahas as I'm listening to Josh preach. I don't know if those of you that were there at 8:40, a great sermon. I think Josh has been doing some of his best preaching here recently. He had a great sermon this morning. And there's a moment there that he talks about how cynicism is not a spiritual gift. And at that point, I got this look from my wife, Sandy. And I realized, I got to tell these people I'm a cynic. I am. I always have been. And I'm not sure where that came from. And maybe I'm going to go back and do some more self-reflection to try to figure out where that came from. Which is an interesting thing to me. So this story, I tried to put this in some context in my head. And the other day, one of my favorite deans at Lipscomb, and certainly one of the people that I have grown to really respect since we brought him to Lipscomb, Leonard Allen, who's Dean of College of Bible and Ministry at Lipscomb. Some of you know him. You've read some of his stuff. The Cruciform Church, I think, was the one that just really hit. Talked about churches of Christ. He's a church Christ historian, a theologian, a historian in church history. One of the smartest people I know. And I've built up a really kind of great relationship with him, even after being provost. And he came in and he handed me this book. A new book. It's not out yet. It's about to be out. It's called The Book Room. And it is a series of stories, memoirs of his life. And he sent me a chapter several weeks ago. I knew he was writing the book. And I've read a little bit of it, to Sandy the other day. It is beautifully written, memoirs of his story, a Church of Christ story, him be growing up in the Church of Christ. And I just think it's the way he's written, it's beautiful. He's telling his life story through these memoirs, okay? I wish I could do that. I can't. I don't have enough time, and I'm not that good. So you're going to have to listen to just some kind of events, and maybe some mini vignettes or something, or things that happened in my life. But as I think about that book, it's called The Book Room, I think about my life too. And my life has been a Church of Christ story, okay? And in many ways, it's been an Otter Creek story. There's good things in that, and there's some difficult things as that, as Josh kind of mentioned, but there are good things in it, mostly. And the other thing I will tell you as we start this out and try to give it a little bit of context is that there's a person in my life that has made a big difference in it, besides Sandy, and she's made a huge difference. We'll talk about that, but a gentleman by the name of Carl McKelvey. I know Fletcher is in a Bible study with Carl. I have been in a Bible study. Some of you remember Carl from Lipscomb, okay? What do you remember about him? The mean dean? You know, we had the lean dean. We had the mean dean. Lean dean was McWayne Craig. The mean dean was Carl McKelvey. Carl is not that way at all, okay? When you get to know him, you begin to understand just who he is and where he comes from. Now, he is a good company man, and he was a great company man at Lipscomb doing the company line, as many of us found out. But he's a man that has taught me a lot, and I can't get into all of that. I've been in a Bible study with him for 27 years. Carl is, he's going to be 93 this year. He is like many of us, getting older, obviously, and getting a little more difficult for him to get around. But up here, he is as sharp and as challenging up here as ever. And just being in that Bible study has been an amazing thing for me. He's taught me basically... Well, his view of living a Christian life is to read the Bible, study the Bible, pray, and then be open to the people and events in your life. In other words, be open to the Holy Spirit. And that's something that I think is really important and has become more important to me. And as I've looked back at my life, I've seen that there are people in my life that have made a huge difference, many of them here. I've seen that there are events in my life that have really shaped it. I have seen prayer guide the path of that life. And then I've seen the Holy Spirit in all of that. Maybe not at the time, which is really fascinating to me. But I do believe we've had these burning, in my life, and Sandy in my life, we have had these burning bush experiences. Some of them are not big bushes, some are little bitty bushes, and I wonder how many of them I've missed. Okay? And I think the great thing, a lot of great things, a difficult things, a lot of great things about getting this age is that you can look back and you can see those perhaps. And that's one of the things that I appreciate about this exercise, even though I'm reluctant, and here we are. So here we are. There's a verse from Psalm 46:10, very familiar with it. You all are, I'm sure. Be still and know that I'm God. And I have to, that just keeps, it's kept ringing in my ear as I thought about what I might say today. Be still and know about God. Know that I am God. Okay, so here we go. I was born in London. London, Kentucky. I used to love to tell when I was a kid, I was born in London. London, Kentucky. Anybody know where London, Kentucky is? Okay. It's like 70 miles north of Knoxville. It's in the heart of Appalachia. It's a poor town. London is great now. I haven't been there in several years, but it was when I was growing up there, the 4 years my mom and dad raised me there, it was pretty much poor town. John F. Kennedy, some of you remember this, he did a tour when he became president. You know, Kennedy, not poor at all, but when Kennedy did a tour of Appalachia, and he said, you know what, there's poverty in Appalachia, we need to have a war on poverty. My mom and dad would have said, what? Of course there's poverty in Appalachia. What are you thinking? You know, you didn't. Anyway, it's just a funny thing that he would make it a good thing. I mean, he declared his war on poverty because of what he saw there. So that's the kind of environment I grew up in. Now, having said that, we weren't the poorest of poor. We had a good life. I'm an only child, which may explain some of the cynicism and may explain a lot of stuff here. Sandy's agreeing, but I am an only child. Now that's really ironic because my mom and dad both had 11 brothers and sisters. Maybe it's not so ironic. I don't know, but I'm an only child. They had 11 brothers and sisters. I have had 44 aunts and uncles. I don't know how many cousins. I have cousins I've never met. I have second and third cousins here maybe, that are here at church at Otter Creek. And they just showed up here. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're related. You know, they're, and so it's a, and that's been a blessing. That's really cool to find these people that I haven't known really well over the years, and they wind up here at Otter Creek. My dad was a farmer most of his life, at least while he was in Kentucky. He raised a lot of vegetables. He's actually sold vegetables to Colonel Sanders, who had his first restaurant about, I guess, 14 miles from London, which is kind of a cool story. And he had about a 30-acre farm. The thing that I always like to tell people, because I think it's really interesting, is during World War II, before I was born, during World War II, he was asked by the Army if they could have like 4 acres of his property. So he gave them 4 acres of his property, war effort. And I said, well, what did they do with it? He said, well, they grew marijuana. So he had 4 acres of marijuana on his farm. And I said, so what did they do with it? He said, I'm not really sure. They came and harvested the seeds, and then they had a big fire. That would have been an interesting fire to be around. But so I'm a first-generation college student, and I'm proud of that fact. My dad, I think he finished ninth grade. My mom finished high school, and I was a first-generation college student, and that is largely because of a Nashville influence, a Lipscomb influence. Before I was born, a year or two before I was born, a gentleman by the name of George Binkley. Any of you know that name? Yeah. He was a doctor here in Nashville. He had some association with Lipscomb. He has a son.
He's a pharmacist.
Mark Binkley. Yes, Mark Binkley is his son. And there are other Binkleys around. But George was doing his residency up in a little hospital in London, Kentucky, and met my mom and dad. And my dad had not been baptized yet. My mom had. They built up quite a relationship, good friendship. I think my mom was a great biscuit maker, and they liked to go to mom and dad's house for biscuits. At least that's what I've heard. And they talked a lot about Lipscomb. George baptized my dad, talked a lot about Lipscomb. And my mom, I was so fascinated by the fact that, you know, there was this Christian college in Nashville, Tennessee. And when they got pregnant with me, she prayed that I would go to Lipscomb. I mean, this was a constant prayer of hers. Okay. 70 years later, I'm still at Lipscomb. Got to be careful what you pray for, guys. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that prayer was answered in some way. Again, people in rural Kentucky have had no connection with Lipscomb, barely a connection with Churches of Christ. There's a little Mount Zion Church of Christ there that they used to go to. And then pray that I would come to Lipscomb. And I did as a student. I mean, I had high school, I'm trying to decide where I'm going to go. And there's a little college in Kentucky, Center College, that I got accepted to, and I thought about going there. But then I came up on a visit to Lipscomb, and, you know, my mind was made up. It was where I was going to go. So George Binkley, the Binkley family had a great influence in my life in ways that I'm not sure they ever really knew. I did talk to them when I came up here, but I'm not sure they knew just how much of an influence they had in my life. So anyway, I spent about 4 years there as a little baby, I guess, boy, child, 4 years old. Had an aunt there, Aunt Lenny, who was really my grandmother in many ways. She was older than my mom. You know, when you have 12 in the family, there's a spread in the ages there. So she was really older. She was older than my mom, and my grandmother died way before I was born, like 10 years before I was born. So I didn't really know that grandmother at all. In fact, I really didn't know either of my grandparents. But She had a great influence on my life. She had gone to college. She was a second grade teacher. And she gave me all kinds of books that I would look at and read. And up until she died, and I guess I was in my 30s when she died, she was still a very strong influence in my life. And part of that was just making sure I was educated, which I thought is interesting looking back on it. So Mom and Dad there for 4 years. Then they moved to a place in Ohio, Uniontown, Kentucky, Uniontown, Ohio, which is in between. It's called Uniontown for a reason. It's in between Akron and Canton, Uniontown. Okay, and on the corner there, there used to be a grocery store, and next to the beauty shop, and that was owned by aunt and uncle. My uncle ran. My uncle Oford. It's a great name. My Uncle Oford ran the grocery store. My Aunt Mary ran the beauty shop. And Mom and Dad moved there and went to work for them. My mom went to cosmetology school, beautician beauty school, got her degree in cosmetology, and was a beautician for years and years. I mean, she was well up into her 70s, I guess, before she quit working, and had a great following when she was in Jacksonville, Florida, where they moved later. So they were in Uniontown, Ohio for 2 years. I lived there for 2 years. All I remember there, you know, I remember a lot about Kentucky. It's interesting. In the old farmhouse that Mom and Dad lived in, and it was my farmhouse that my dad and his brothers and father had built. And I remember the just everything about the little wooden latch on the cupboard and all of that, the big pot belly stoves. Remember all of that. I don't remember a whole lot about Uniontown. I remember Miss Penny, who I stayed with. She was kind of nanny or whatever, but she had a whole bunch of kids. I mean, she kept several of us, and I remember jumping out of windows into the mattresses that she had piled out. And I remember it being cold, and my mom and dad thought it was cold, so they moved down to Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. And my dad had worked there years before he met my mom, and had worked there on the docks unloading cargo on the docks in Jacksonville. And he had a sister there, my Aunt Bertha. I have some great aunts and uncle names. And my Aunt Bertha, he had a great respect for her. And she was older than he was, again, because he was kind of at the end of those 11 brothers and sisters. And he wanted to move down there, so they moved down there. And my mom opened a beauty shop, and Dad went to work for Winn-Dixie, and cutting meat for Winn-Dixie. So Ohio was just too cold for them. They didn't like it, moved down there. And that's where I grew up. And there, my Aunt Bertha, who was, I was very close to her. She used to give me books, all kinds of books. Now, the books she gave me, I wasn't quite as interested in. Most of them were about birds and things like that. Now, I think if I were to look at them, I might be a little more interested in them. But as a, 10, 11-year-old, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But anyway, she gave me the books, and she was always, she was a great cook, and we loved going over to my Aunt Bert's house, as we called her. We went to a church there where I was baptized. Called Arlington Church Christ, and I'll out them. It was a great place for me in many ways. It's where I grew up. Strong elders that would give you, once I was baptized, I learned I needed to be baptized there. So once I got baptized at 10, I was, well, now you're a man, you need to be part of the service and all of this. So I would have to do communion, and I would be given by an elder exactly what I was supposed to say in communion. Okay, all that was good. It was a formative thing for me. And, there's a book in, or chapter in Leonard Allen's book that I was mentioning where he talks about growing up in a Church of Christ and a young kid and laying in the pew and looking up at the fluorescent lights and how all of that just registered with him. Now, that was my experience, growing up there and just people there, great friends, people that, just were concerned about me and nurtured me and loved my parents. But as Josh mentioned, sometimes in churches there is toxicity, and sometimes there is church trauma. And my dad was put up to be an elder, and there was some grumbling in the church. This is perhaps some of the cynicism. There was some grumbling in the church because he was the father of one child and didn't have children. And my dad said, I'm not having any of this. You know, I'm pulling my name out. And you know, and that was a personal thing, and it hurt them because these were friends of theirs, and so they left that church. I was actually in college when this happened, the first year in college, and they went to a place called San Jose Church Christ, which was, when I came home, was a great environment for me to come home to. I came home from college, and it was a place where there was a lot of love. It was, you heard Dan Harrell not too long ago. Dan's parents were there, and my mom and dad became great friends with Dan's parents, and I got to know Dan that way. But it was just a very positive thing, getting out of the toxicity at Arlington Church Christ. Now, Arlington Church Christ, I think, has changed. I've not been back there in years. It's now a very multiracial church, I think. It's a very different place. And I haven't been to San Jose in years, so I don't know anything about these churches, but they were great. They had great influences in different ways, okay? Even though Arlington had some difficult things for me there, at the end, Arlington Church Christ, it still had a positive influence in my life. And then I came to Lipscomb, and I thought I was in heaven when I came to Lipscomb. Growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, most of my life, it was, without a doubt, a mission field. Small churches filled with very similar people. No matter where you went, some of them were called liberal, some of them were called conservative, but they were all pretty much the same looking back on it. But I come to Nashville as a student, and there's this church smorgasbord. You know, I can go wherever I want. I can go this place one Sunday, this place the next Sunday, and I loved it. It was great. And there were three churches, though, that I really wound up going to. And they're very interesting. One of them was Hillsboro. I used to love to hear Basil Barrett Baxter preach. Just loved it. I don't know why, I just did. Another one was Otter Creek. I'd come here every Wednesday night, like the rest of you sitting in here. We'd be driving down. There'd be that long line from Lipscomb down Granny White to Otter Creek. And Buddy Arnold would get up there and get so mad when we were requesting Stamp Baxter songs, you know. But it was such a great experience. The whole thing was a great, Otter Creek was great. But the third church that I went to a lot, and I really loved, was Belmont. And, you know, you have to talk about these burning bush experiences. And there was perhaps a burning bush experience there for me when I heard Don Finto. And Don Finto taught me about grace. That's not something I really understood growing up, where I grew up and how I grew up in Church of Christ. Again, I don't want to diminish any of that. But I learned grace from Don Finto. And just listening to that, wow. You know, I don't know. There's just something about that that was so positive in my life and just changed my way of thinking in so many ways. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I've told Don that. Don wouldn't have known me. I wasn't one of, I guess, Don's. I didn't hang around Don a lot. But I've told Don that, and the truth of the matter is, even though I was in the pew listening to him and not one that was really closely associated with him, he had a tremendous influence on me and my friends. I mean, we just loved going there. And then this other church that was so great to me was Otter Creek. And here's the deal with Otter Creek. When I was in college, I was president of Circle K. And at Circle K, we were working with this. Circle K is like the collegiate Kiwanis Club. And Circle K was a big deal at Lipscomb. Mike Adams had been president and international president of a whole organization.
And as a service club, one of our projects was this black orphanage, very poor orphanage, called Buva. And we used to support that orphanage. We'd go out there two or three times a week. We would play with the kids. We'd do all kinds of things. I mean, and it was a really poor place. I mean, it was awful in terms of the living conditions for those kids. And it was illegal. I found that out several years. It was operating illegally, and chair of our social work department at Lipscomb used to be, worked for the state, and she's told me she tried to close it down several times because it was so bad. We didn't know that. We were just out there trying to help the kids. Anyway, Buva had a fire, and it burned down, and the orphans, the kids were displaced and didn't have, they wound up going somewhere, but everything they had went up in the fire. And so we're going to, you know, college, we're going to do what we can to help them. We tried. Several of us went around to different churches of Christ here in Nashville and asked if they could help. And some, okay, this is the 70s, some just said no, you know, and they didn't give us a reason, but it's pretty obvious, maybe. And went to Belmont. Belmont said, oh yeah, you can, after Sunday night services, get up and say something and pass the plate. So I did that, passed the plate. And again, went to some that just said no. Came to Otter Creek, and there was an elder here by the name of Charlie Brandon. And Charlie said, first place, you know, I called him. We said, well, you need to meet Charlie Brandon. He's head of benevolence. And I go to meet him in his office somewhere on West End. I don't know where it was. Big old conference room. And I'm just like really impressed. I walk in and sit down and talk to Charlie. And he listens to my story and says, what do you need? And I said, well, they need shoes, they need clothes, they need food. And he said, well, go to JCPenney. Get whatever you need at JCPenney. Go to Huff's Market. We got an account there. And get what you need there. And it was amazing. I think I probably spent more than Charlie anticipated, but he was still fine with it, you know. And it was just amazing the way Otter Creek responded. And that is one of the reasons I'm at Otter Creek today. And that's just one of those burning bush moments in my life that kind of really put me in a direction that I'm in now. That was a big bush, and you know, it was just interesting. And relative to the way some of the other churches respond, now I get it. You know, being an elder, I understand. You know, you just don't. Anybody comes handed out, you just don't give it to them. But Charlie did, and Otter Creek did, and it was amazing opportunity for me to see how a church can work, and. It was great in that relation. Charlie was just, as you guys know, a great guy. So anyway, another sort of burning bush moment was I was at Lipscomb. I'm going to have to hurry up here. Here's a gentleman by the name of Pat Deese. Most of you know Pat. Many of you know Pat. Dr. Deese, as I knew him at the time, or Doc. And I graduated from Lipscomb, and I came. Oh, man, I was such a good doober. I came to church on Sunday morning, the day after I graduated, with my car loaded. Okay? I was headed back to Florida. I didn't know if I'd ever come back here or not. So Pat Deese comes up to me as I'm leaving the building, and he says...
It was here, wasn't it? It was Otter Creek.
It was Otter Creek, yes. Yeah, right. Not here, but at the other Otter Creek, yeah. And as I'm leaving the building, you know, he says to me, Craig, you don't really want to go to law school. So, well, that's what I've been preparing to do. I've been a political science major. And he said, no, you want to come back to Lipscomb and teach. And I said, that's interesting. But Dr. Deese, I want to make some money first. And he said, no, money can come later. I said, you want to go graduate school, don't go to law school, go to graduate school, take this, this, and this, and come back to Lipscomb and teach. And I said, let me think about it. Drove all the way down Jacksonville, thinking about it. By the time I got to Jacksonville, it's like, that's what I want to do. So I changed my, dropped out of the, well, I didn't drop out because I wasn't in, but I was accepted at Florida Law, didn't go, and instead asked if I could join the political science master's degree program. And they graciously said yes. So my whole world flipped in just that 10-hour drive down to Jacksonville. But it was, again, one of those burning bush moments in my life. I went to Gainesville, got my master's degree, came back up here, called Dr. Deese, or actually called him before I came up. I called Pat and I said, okay, I'm done, ready. He said, oh, well, Craig, there's not really a job. At that moment, I'm thinking, that's so Lipscomb, you know. So I came back up here. I came up anyway, and I beat the streets. I walked. This is the true story. It was, for 2 weeks, it was like the coldest. This was 77. It was the coldest winter. I'm walking. I have my resume in hand. I'm going from one office downtown to another. I don't know any of these people. It's all cold calls, okay, really cold calls. And I get, no, but why don't you go see this person? Or why don't you go see that person? And eventually out of that, 2 weeks, and it was really cold, 2 weeks, just walking office to office, I wound up with two jobs. One was with the state managing, I'm 24, managing a office of 20-some people. And the other one was working with the state legislature. But it was only a 6-month job. I want to do that. I'm not going to manage. I'm not an office man. So I took the state legislature as a research analyst. Most of what I did a little research, but most of what, and I learned a lot about the state legislature, which is still true, not necessarily good. I wrote a lot of, therefores, you know, you so.
Proclamations.
Yeah, I did a lot of proclamation writing, so I got tired of writing them. But at the end of that 6 months, I actually got offered a job, full-time job with the legislature. But I also got a call from Pat, and he said, Craig, the job is open. Perry Cotham has just resigned. Perry reminds me of this all the time, by the way. So sorry to hear he's not doing well. But Perry Cotham, I just kind of had it with Poulos, I think. And said, that's it, I'm out of here. And so I took Perry Cotham's job at Lipscomb. And I was probably one of the last people that Poulos interviewed. He left that, I started in that summer, and he left that summer. And it was, those of you that are familiar, that was a mess. And I thought, what in the world have I gotten into? Am I going to even have a job? Is there even going to be a school here and all of that? Anyway, all of that worked out, and that's how I came to Lipscomb. So I was very young when I came to Lipscomb. I was 24, and I taught classes with students I had actually sat in class with as a student. And that was awful. And I was a terrible teacher. And you talk to some of those students today, and they'll say, yeah, you were. Sandy's roommate was one of my students, and she used to go in, I found this out later, go in and talk about how terrible I was. Well, you know, I was a new graduate student out, and I was going to do every, I was going to make sure they had every bit of knowledge they needed to have, and I was going to make sure they got it. And I learned very quickly that that's not the way I could teach. First of all, I'm not a great lecturer. Second of all, students don't need to know every bit of knowledge. They just need to know how to get to it and know some really general principles. And I learned that real quickly, and I would go into a class later and say, okay, here are the two or three things I want you to know. Bang, bang, bang. You know, and they would get it, hopefully. So very young, went to Vanderbilt. Lipscomb helped pay my way. Vanderbilt helped pay my way. I had a great graduate student life. I had people paying me money to go to school, and I was great, and life was good. Now, graduate school was hard for me, I'll admit it. It was really hard when I was at the University of Florida, a little bit better at Vanderbilt. Graduate school was challenging for me in many ways because I had one professor, Bill Habard, who would challenge my whole faith. And he had a favorite question. Every class I had, about four or five classes with him at Vanderbilt, every class I had, he would say, "Okay, Craig, what is the Campbellite view of?" Okay, whatever. "What's a Campbellite view of Aristotle's ethics?" "Well, Professor Habard, I think it's pretty much everybody's view of Aristotle's ethics." And we would go on from there. But I had two very strong champions there, both of them strong Christians who helped me get through, William Habard and Mike Nelson. This is the period where I met my wife, who really was a burning bush experience in many ways. And this is where I met Sandy. Sandy and I used to tell my students we met on a street corner. And we did. And we were introduced by Mary and Matt Hearn, who, of course, go to church here now. Matt's an elder, obviously. Mary and her sister Jennifer, who I was kind of a friend with, thought I would make a good match with Sandy, or she would be a good match with me, and they were right. And it's that has been the biggest blessing in my life. Scott, my son, also another blessing in my life, but Sandy obviously has been my spiritual anchor in so many ways. So I was at Lipscomb faculty member for years, just loving every bit of that, tenured. I was a backbencher. You guys know what a backbencher is? Steve, I bet you do. You know what a backbencher is? Anybody know what a backbencher? Backbenchers are those people in UK, England, who sit on the back bench of Parliament. And they're not part of the government, they're not part of the shadow government, but they're the ones at question time. If you ever get a chance, watch Question Time. It's sometimes advertised on, they sometimes show it on C-SPAN. And it's the craziest thing in the world. Prime Minister gets up there, and they're yelling and shouting at things at him and asking him questions, asking her questions. And the backbenchers are the worst because they're not part of any government, and they're members of Parliament, but they just throw questions at it all the time. Questioning government. So I'm a backbencher questioning Lipscomb. Okay, always questioning Lipscomb. And very proud of being a backbencher. And I love my students. My students were just wonderful students. And the best thing about being a faculty member, first of all, being a faculty member is the best job. Being a faculty member at a Christian college is the best job in the world. My opinion, okay? The best thing about it is students, the students that you get to see. One real quick story. At Candace's inauguration, I had a student come up after some event, and he's coming toward me, and he's walking toward me, and I'm, "Oh, I know this guy. Who is this guy? What am I going to say to him? I'm not going to know his name." He held out his card. "Thank you, God. Here's your card. I know your name now." And I looked on the bottom of it, and it said, "Supreme Court Justice, State of Illinois." And he said, "I just wanted you to know," and what he said was interesting, "who I had become. Not what I had become, but who I had become. And you helped me get here." That is what's the best part in the world, best job in the world, being a faculty member at Christian College. A bunch of stuff there. Anyway, became provost. You guys know what a provost is? Some of you do. Some of you don't.
The dean of deans.
More or less, yeah, yeah. I used to like to introduce myself to the people. I'm one of those few people you have to introduce your title, okay? I'm a provost at Lipscomb. Oh, what does that mean? Well, there's several definitions. One is keeper of the jail. Go to the dictionary, keeper of jail. My favorite, though, was keeper of the stables. And the other one's chief academic officer, and that's what I was at Lipscomb. Which, again, if you think about where I came from, that was pretty cool for me to be that. I served three presidents, actually three and a half. Steve Flatt, Randy Lowry, and then Candace McQueen. The half person would be Harold Hayslip, who was a prince, and he was interim for about 6 months. And he was just a prince. I get a lot of credit. I was there for 25 years as provost, which you should question anybody's sanity that does that job for 25 years. Actually quit several times, but was talked out, or not talked out, I've been ignored. I get a lot of credit for doing a lot of things, graduate programs, starting a lot of programs at Lipscomb. I hired over 300 faculty. All of that happened. I hired most of the faculty that are there right now. 25 years, you hire a lot of people. All of that happened with great people around me and faculty who were willing to create programs and do great things there. Sandy and I have been at Otter Creek for 40 years, and we have been loved and nurtured by this church, as has our son, Scott. We have a story that I'm probably not going to tell because of time, and that's a very big burning bush story about deer that crossed our path, and Isaiah 52:12, which is a story of when we were coming to church one Sunday morning, and Sandy was dealing, I won't tell it in detail, Sandy was dealing with breast cancer, and it was really moving to see Pat this morning. But dealing with breast cancer, similar to Pat, and getting ready to have surgery, and both of us were just nervous as can be about it. And as we were coming to church, we had two beautiful stag deer jump out in front of the car. And turned around in the back, two beautiful stag deer jumped behind the car. And I said, Sandy, oh, wow, maybe that's a sign. And she said, well, I was been reading this morning or whenever, Isaiah 52:12, it says, but you will not leave in haste or go in flight, for the Lord will go before you, the God of Israel will be your rear guard. Burning bush moment. And I got to say, Pat said it this morning, but I got to say, that really changed our lives in many, many ways. Not all good, but mostly good, which is really interesting. So still at Lipscomb. I have a bunch of titles, different titles, all meaningless. My main title that I love is faculty member. And again, going back to what I said before, I'm not going to get the chance to have the impact I had before I became provost on students. Just not going to have that kind of time. But I'm enjoying teaching graduate students right now. It's a blast. They're serious. They come in and they're ready to go. One last story. And that's our son, who, again, I'm blessed in many ways with this. But when Scott was at Lipscomb, he comes in and he says, well, Dad, I've decided what I'm going to major in. And I said, well, what's that? He said, I'm going to major in history and political science. And I, first words out of my mouth, and what are you going to do with that, kid? You know? Really, you know, I'm the guy that has been preaching, you not got to major in what you love. You got to major in what you love. And then I realized what I said. I did a lot of backtracking. He went off, got his master's in political science at NYU, goes and gets George Mason, gets a doctorate in political science. He is now teaching at Lipscomb. His office is two doors down from mine. Okay? It's just a sweet story that is, I think, God's blessing. And it's be silent and know that I'm God and I'm here. And then I think about that, the Isaiah 52:12. God before me, God after me in my whole life. And it's just a great piece. I believe the Holy Spirit has been working greatly. Carl McKelvey, who, like I said, is kind of getting towards the end here, at least physically, has said something. He spoke to the theology program, the advisory committee for the College of Bible and ministry the other day, and he told them, one of the things he told them was that at this point in his life, he's realized that there are lots of doors that have been opened by people who want to help you when you can't help yourself. And I'm seeing that more and more in my life, and I know Carl is feeling it in his life. And I think that's the Holy Spirit working in our lives. So that's my story. Gripes, refutations, concerns, disputations, doesn't matter, it's my life, so sorry. Okay, I think I've taken more than time. So.